All right, welcome back to a special edition Black Shoe Diaries podcast. Once again, I'm joined with Adam Collier, our resident celebrity extraordinaire, and today we've got a special Penn State guest. Before we get to that, we're going to do a quick intro with Adam. Adam, how are you doing? How are things going with you?
I'm good, Jeff. How you doing?
Most importantly, the first question is for you. What are you drinking right now?
Well, I was taking solicitations on Twitter, but unfortunately, I didn't get anything nearly as good as what I bought, which was a bottle of Local 2 from Brooklyn Brewery, which is quite delicious and also fairly alcoholic, which, given the comments that we had today and all the news that we had today about certain issues, which we will not discuss, it's probably necessary.
Okay. I've got, as I stated earlier, I've got some Miller Lite next to me. I'm ready to go. So without further ado, we're going to bring on a very special guest that has graciously decided to join us. A fan favorite of many of our readers, played for Penn State from 06 to 10, was number 5 in your playbooks, number 1 in your hearts. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Graham Zug is joining us. Graham, say hello.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Very, very well. Now, so let's dive right into it. I think Adam's got the first question, and let's see what he's got for you.
All right, so Graham and I were talking a little bit off camera before. We have a friend or two in common. But, you know, I'm kind of interested. So, Graham, I know you came to Penn State and you were, you walked on to Penn State. And I remember, you know, when I was in college and your brother was around and we had some friends, some mutual friends, they actually went to see you play in a high school game and they came back and I said, oh, you know, how's David's brother? And he was like, oh, you know, he's pretty good, dude. I was like, well, can he play here? He was like, yeah, I think he could. It's pretty impressive, at least from the stands. I'm curious what your recruitment was like and how you decided to come to Penn State and walk on to Penn State and what it was like earning a scholarship after you got here.
Yeah, they basically were really late to recruit me. Since they didn't offer me, they obviously knew they could hold off for a while. And I didn't have any offers from any big D1 schools. The only offer that I was really interested in was a full ride to Delaware. I was actually at Delaware when Penn State called. I was about to commit, and Coach Kenny called and said that he wanted to come to my basketball game the next day. So I told Delaware that I had to hold off a day, and I went to went back to my basketball game the next day, and Coach Kenny was there and sitting with my football coaches, and I had probably my best basketball game that I had in my whole career. And afterwards, we sat in the gym, and he basically said that they wanted me to come to Penn State and be a preferred walk-on, and that was a good opportunity for me because you kind of choose your own destiny. If you want to succeed, if you want to get a scholarship, you have to work hard for it. But if you just want to go through the motions and be a part of the team, you can do that as well by walking on. I kind of liked what he said, so you know I knew it was in my hands that if I worked hard enough, I could get a scholarship, and ultimately that's what I did.
So you were ready to go to Delaware. Yeah?
Correct. Yeah, I was 100% ready. I already told my parents I was ready to commit that day. But before that, I only talked to Penn State about once when Coach McCleary came to my school and talked to me. And he kind of said that they were going to hold off the wait to see where all the scholarship kids were going to be before talking to me. And they never really talked back after that. So I kind of threw them behind and figured I was, you know, my dream was over with. I wasn't going to get to go to Penn State, and that I was ready to go to Delaware and possibly start my first year.
At what point during your time at Penn State did you earn that scholarship, and what did that mean to you?
It was after my second year, so I really didn't play a whole lot before that. And I got the word right before camp, going into my third year, that Coach Paterno wanted to put me on scholarship, that he saw a lot of me when I was working hard and on the scout team and the little bit that I did get in the game. So that meant the world to me. I was like, man, I've done it. I've got my scholarship. That's what I really wanted to do, was prove myself to the coaches and the team, and that's what I was able to do. And it meant so much to me to be able to do that, especially with the receivers we had there. I mean, Dion, Jordan, Derek, they were all there still, and they looked at me as the fourth guy to offer scholarship to.
So you were in 05 or you were 06, you graduated from Mannheim?
I graduated in 06.
So you were in class of 06, right? And if you for those of you that don't follow recruiting that far back, the Penn State took one wide receiver in that class. And correct. If I put those Graham Zug and this wide receiver's name up to each other, I'd be willing to bet that everybody that's listening will take Graham Zug every day and twice on Sunday. This guy was a 5-star wide receiver from Virginia, but his story ended up quite differently. That was Chris Bell. So I don't know if you ever got to play with him, but I think that in the long run, you sticking with Penn State and walking on there was definitely much better for Penn State.
I'd agree.
Graham, what was it like? I mean, you were with Dion and Derek and Jordan for about 3 years or so, or for 2 years, I guess, right?
Correct.
What was it like playing with them? Like how much of a mentoring relationship did you have with any of them? Anything like that?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I played with them for 3 years. I redshirted my first year, and I was able to work in with them in my next 2 years. It was unbelievable to have them ahead of me. You look at Dion and Jordan and Derek. They're not the biggest guys. They're not the strongest guys. But what they did do was they ran fast and they ran good routes and they were well coached. They listened and they worked hard. I knew I wasn't going to be the biggest guy, or the strongest guy, or the fastest guy, but I knew if I listened well and was able to be coached and work hard just like they did, I knew I could do the same with them. And that's what I was able to do. I learned from them and made the most of the opportunity to have three of the best wide receivers teaching me.
All right, well, let's get into some of these questions because, as Graham, you know, we asked some of our readers to submit some questions. Some of them, like I said, were kind of off the wall. Some of them that were football related, we'll get to in a minute. But one of the first that is very near and dear to my heart, and hopefully you can have a decision, is scotch or bourbon?
I don't really do much liquor, so I'd have to say neither. I'm more of a microbrew guy. I like trying different beers.
All right.
And I've gotten into wine lately, too. My fiance's uncle gave me a really expensive bottle of wine. He gave me a glass of it, and that kind of got me hooked. So I like trying different wines and trying different beers.
Any microbrews that stick out for you? What are your tops?
Oh, man, there's so many. I like, there's a ton. I can't even pick five, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, I guess. I've never gotten into those. I know, Adam, you like them a little bit. So you guys might be able to wax poetic on the different kinds, and you probably wouldn't be able to name a top five either, I bet.
Probably not, but Graham, you're endearing yourself to our old podcasters, Chris and Kevin, are hardcore microbrew fans, and so they're excited to hear something like that from you.
Yeah, I just like trying different ones and seeing what's out there, and it's fun. There's so many different ones, so it's you never know what you're gonna get.
Good man.
Well done. All right, well then let's try something else. This one you probably will have an answer for, at least I hope so. Favorite breakfast meat: bacon, sausage, patty or link, or something else we don't even know about?
Bacon, without a doubt. Crispy bacon.
There you go. All right, let's go with the football question really quickly, just to bring it back a little. So there's been somewhat of a debate. So since the new coaching staff came in, obviously they changed the training method. Coach Fitz is a little different than I think your average strength coach. And I guess there had been a fairly serious debate on high-intensity training or Olympic-style training. So which would you prefer, and how did you feel about your strength training regimen when you were in college?
When I was there, JT was my strength coach. I think he did a wonderful job. He did what he needed to do to help us succeed. I don't think there was ever a time where we'd match up against somebody and we were the tired team. We never lost a game because we were tired. We were always in better shape than the other team. But, you know, I think there were some times where we might have been just a little out strength. The opponents might have been a little bit stronger at some positions. But I don't think that ever, you know, prevented us from losing a game. My preference, I did Olympic lifting in high school, and then obviously the high intensity in college. And, you know, I like them both. It was kind of nice to start with Olympic in high school and then switch to the high intensity. But if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick the Olympic just because it didn't cause as many people to throw up during the lift.
Have you been back to see the new strength facilities and things like that?
I have not been back yet since they made the switch. I was back prior to that, but not since they made the switches.
I'm curious. I think we'd love to have you back, Connor. At least we'd love to chat about what you think if you ever see them do the beach workouts, too, outside in the sand pit, which just look like the most miserable thing in the history of the world.
Yeah.
So you haven't been back there since they made the switch, but I assume you've been watching kind of from afar. Can you give us kind of your initial impressions of Coach O'Brien, the guys he's brought on, the two coaches he's retained? What are your thoughts on the new staff?
I'm extremely, extremely thrilled to have him as the next coach at Penn State. I think he's doing a wonderful job. You know, he's saying the right things. He's doing the right things. He's walking the walk and talking the talk. He's doing a great job. The recruits he's able to get and the coaching staff that he was able to bring in, you know, they're top-tier guys. They're some of the best coaches there are. And, you know, I think it shows with the recruits that they were able to get and what they've been able to do so far, especially with everything going on. You know, I think it's extremely impressive what he's doing, and I'm excited for the season to get here and for his future at Penn State to carry on, you know, the traditions and the legacy of what Penn State truly is.
Did you think that whoever came on board was going to have trouble, regardless of the circumstances, pretend that everything that happened didn't happen? Did you think whoever came on was going to be kind of behind the eight ball, just following a legend?
Oh, absolutely. I thought there was no way that a coach could come in here to Penn State and do a good job. I mean, Penn State sells itself to recruits, but, you know, it's never easy to come in and follow a legend at anything, whether it's a job, whether it's a sport. It's never easy to do that. And for him to come in and already do what he's doing is pretty incredible.
Yeah, like you said, he has been saying a lot of the right things, and I think a lot of fans had initial trepidations, but many of them have come around. He hasn't played a game yet, but like you said, his recruiting has been very well organized. They put a lot of good efforts into it, so it's been exciting. Back over to maybe something a little more lighter fare. Many people know that Joe Paterno had somewhat of a restrictive hair policy. There was facial hair restrictions, long hair restrictions. Are you somewhat jealous that those have now been lifted?
Am I jealous that we weren't able to have a beard?
Would you have played with a sweet mustache and long flowing locks?
I wouldn't have played with a mustache. I probably would have had some sort of beard. I have one now. I was glad. It never bothered me. It never made me upset. It never drove me nuts. You know, it was his rule. It made us who we are. It showed us that things like that don't really matter. That, you know, you don't have to try and make yourself different by having a beard or having long hair, earrings, or anything of that nature. You followed his rules and you lived by them, and you didn't let it bother you. You looked beyond it. You know, you can learn a lot from those little things. But, you know, it never made me jealous. However, I do have a beard now. My hair is not long, though.
All right, well, here's a good question, too, from another reader. So you're from Central Pennsylvania, essentially.
Correct, yeah.
Pittsburgh or Philadelphia?
Philly.
Oh.
Philly.
Boo.
Philly. I'm closer to Philly. A diehard Flyers fan. However, I don't root against any Pittsburgh teams. I don't mind Pittsburgh. So,
well, you had to root against them this past NHL playoffs when they were in the first round.
Yeah, I don't really root against them. I just hope for a good game, and I hope that the Flyers come out on top. But, you know, if it was, you know, the Penguins in the Stanley Cup, I'd root for them. I root for them until they play each other, and then I would choose one or the other. My dad went to dental school at Pittsburgh, so I kind of have a reason to root for Pittsburgh. And then I'm Central graduate, also went Dan Kreider played for the Steelers, so I have a couple of reasons I can root for the Steelers as well.
All right. Well, I'll accept that. As a diehard Pittsburgh fan, that's the best I can root for. All right, so another question from a reader, and this one I'm actually very intrigued to hear your answer, and it's kind of a two-parter. What was the most friendly place you visited in terms of both fans and environment? And conversely, what was the hardest or the most tense or the most or the worst fans, essentially, to play in front of?
The best, Alabama, by far. I mean, they cheered us on the field. They beat us after a game. There was thousands of fans lined up outside our locker room. Not so much Penn State fans, but majority Alabama out there cheering us walking from the locker room to our buses. They cheered us as we left. True hospitality. My parents said when they were walking from where they parked to the stadium, they were walking and the fans said, "Hey, come on in, grab a burger, grab some barbecue." And they were like, "Yeah, right, we're not going into, you know, foreign territory. This is the other team." By like the fourth house that they went by and the fourth people to ask them to come in, they were finally like, "You know what, let's do it." They went in and they had some of the best barbecues, some of the best burgers. They just made friends with these people, and you wouldn't get that anywhere else you went, especially in the Big Ten. As far as the most hostile place, probably Iowa, I want to say, just because they stormed the field on us when they beat us. But their fans are just dirty. They curse at you the whole time. They say things about, you know, women and things like that. They're just real raunchy and dirty and rude. And their sidelines are so close to, you know, the field that you hear everything. And it's easy to block out. However, when you're not in and you're just kind of, you know, joking around, you know, it's kind of easy to hear. I mean, that's kind of funny, but I would say they're probably the dirtiest.
That's interesting.
Did that ever affect you guys on the field?
Absolutely not. I mean, half the time they'd say something, you just kind of laugh because you're like, how do they even come up with something that bad?
Nice.
But I think that year when we lost was probably just mainly due to the cold. We were so cold. We didn't have anything to keep us warm.
I guess, you know, so we just discussed away memories, but what about memories at home and home games and your favorite Beaver Stadium moment when you were there?
My favorite Beaver Stadium moment was definitely by far my first time running out of the tunnel. It was a dream of mine to go to Penn State. I grew up going to all the games. I hardly missed any since I was born. And first time I ran out of the tunnel, I was kind of like, man, it's unbelievable. It just hit me because I always viewed it from the outside looking through the tunnel. I never viewed it from inside the tunnel looking out to the stadium. But the whole time I was running out, I was just thinking, man, you know, I bet my parents are so proud right now. They helped me get to where I wanted to be. And I was just thinking about what they're doing up there in the crowd with my grandparents. They're probably bawling their eyes out. But I think that had to be my favorite moment in Beaver Stadium. Not the touchdowns, not the catches, not winning games. It's just kind of that dream come true of playing for Penn State and running out on the field.
How big does that stadium look from when it's filled to capacity when you're down when you're down on the field?
You feel like you just fell in a huge sinkhole and you're at the very bottom of it, and there's just stands going up all around you and filled with fans going nuts, screaming. It feels huge. It's not 110,000. It seems like a ton more than that.
What would be your favorite moment on the field then? You mentioned the catches and the touchdowns and the wins. If you had to pick one play or one drive or something on the field that was just the tops of your career, what would it be?
As far as like on the field play, I'd say definitely my three touchdowns out at Michigan. I love playing in Beaver Stadium, but I really, truly love playing on away games. And when you make those three touchdowns, when you make the first one, the crowd goes dead silent, and then you can hear the little section of Penn State fans going nuts. You know, and then that happening three times that game, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, that stadium is awkwardly quiet. I've been there for a couple of games, and it's just they don't make a lot of noise, so it must have been even better to hear just dead silence when you go in for that second, third touchdown.
Yeah, they call it the Big House, but I'll be honest, it's got nothing on Penn State. It's got absolutely nothing. You sit so far back, it doesn't look big. You know, Beaver Stadium is 10 times better than it. As far as my one single play, I would say either my Ohio State catch in my third year, which led to the field goal, which ended up winning, helping to win, or my third down catch against LSU across the middle that led to the field goal to win the game.
Huge play. I was in the stands for that. Thank you so much.
How sloppy was that field?
Oh, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I have a picture of it, and I was just actually looking at it today when I was doing some work, and it just amazed me. It was so sloppy. It was almost to the point where it wasn't bad because you sunk down in the field so far that you had traction all the time.
I honestly can't even believe you were able to play. So we were at that game, and we parked, and the rain was coming down so hard when we parked the car that we weren't even able to get out of the car. I can't even imagine how you guys were able to, like, actually run on the field.
Well, we drove, and we were driving. It wasn't bad out. And all of a sudden, it just got dark and started pouring. We're like, oh, my gosh, it feels going to be soaked. And we're like, it's far. It's going to soak up real fast. It'll be clean. We'll be able to play. This is going to be fine. So we go in the locker room, we walk out in the field. The field's perfect. It's soft. It's nice. We're in our dress pants. We go back in. We get changed. We go to come out. I go to come out with, I remember standing there with dress Reno. We're walking out first, and we go to come out. We open up the doors of the locker room, and we look, and all it was just a waterfall coming off the tunnel. You couldn't even see out to the field. And we both had our visors on. We're like, oh, my gosh, how are we going to catch punch? We didn't even think about the field and how bad it was going to be. So we go to take our first step out in the field as we're running, and you literally sunk in. Your shoes got stuck. They were, like, suctioned down into the mud. It was like doing high knees the whole time.
I bet.
It was unbelievable.
I remember at one point during that game, you know, there kept being, like, random fumbled snaps on both sides of the field and our for both teams. And it was occurring, like, right around the 50-yard line, anywhere between the 40s, right? And you could just look at the field and just see this massive mud puddle. I mean, I can't even believe that it was functional, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just surprised we played. I don't think it was a bad decision to play. I'm just surprised it was even playable, let alone, I mean, no injuries, minimal turnovers, like all that. It was still a pretty well-played game.
Yeah, all things considered, it definitely was a pretty well-played game. And actually, I don't know if you got to meet any LSU fans down there, but I was actually sitting on the border of the LSU-Penn State section, and LSU fans were great. Probably,
they were.
I don't know if they were as great as the Alabama fans because they sound fantastic, but the LSU fans were wonderful to be around. They were really knowledgeable and just good people. Yeah.
Yep, I can agree with that.
All right, well, let's move on to another question, though. As fun as these stories were, and I think this one's going to be kind of a loaded question for you, Graham. What was your second favorite Penn State sports team? And I think you probably realize why that's a loaded question for you.
My second favorite sports team?
Assuming that Penn State football was your favorite, what was your second favorite to watch, kind of take in?
I'd have to say field hockey.
And why would you have to say that?
strictly because my sister played.
I mean, I'm really disappointed that you didn't say the club squash team.
But I was thinking about it. However, my brother wasn't there when I played, so.
That's true. Very true.
You could always go with women's volleyball, but I'll give you field hockey because of the family connection.
Correct. Yep.
I didn't follow them closely when I was there, and afterwards. But how did they do well? Was Deneen one of the stars? Fill us in on how she's doing.
Yeah, they did great. They went to the national championship 1 year when she was there. She got voted all Big Ten. She did great. She was one of the leaders. She was a captain her senior year. Led the team in scoring a year. She did really well. She got changed around. She could play any position she needed to. She was a true leader for the team, and she was definitely looked up to.
Sounds like it runs in the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I guess, listen, this is clearly the most important question by far. You're listening to music before the game in your headset. What's on?
Well, we actually weren't allowed to have headphones on before the game. But if I did have on some music, probably some good rock, and maybe some Linkin Park, something of that nature. I wouldn't really listen to rap or R&B or anything then. I'd be more with some rock or some harder stuff, probably, just get a little fired up.
Did anybody listen to, you said you couldn't listen to it then, but throughout your time with the guys, did anybody listen to some crazy music, like speed metal, or was some guy just into like teeny bopper pop music? Did anybody listen to some music that made you go, what the hell are you listening to?
Oh, I'm sure there was. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I remember some people, you just kind of laugh at what they were listening to. I can't remember any exact songs, but... yeah, there's definitely some people that, listen to some heavy stuff. Some people that listen to, like, some slow jams and stuff of that nature. But I can't really think of the exact song.
All right, so...
There might have been some Boys and Men, I think.
Yeah.
Somebody. I like it.
Excellent. Some down on bended knee to get ready for an Ohio State game?
Exactly. Whatever helps.
Hey, whatever gets you pumped up. Those boys from Philadelphia, they can sing a tune. So if it makes you go out and beat the Buckeyes, I don't care what you're listening to.
Listen, that's Pennsylvania, so I think it's probably okay.
Hey, Graham, when you were there or when you were being recruited, did you ever enjoy a Sue Paterno meal?
No, I did not. I never got that opportunity. Just because I think it was more because I was late to be recruited. And it was right near the deadline of when they recruited me. I think that's why I never got the opportunity.
Okay.
I did get to meet her. I did get to be around her. She was an extremely nice individual. It would have been awesome to have that opportunity.
Oh, I like this one. The funniest story with the team that people wouldn't necessarily know about.
Yeah, we're gonna kind of put you on the spot with that one, and you don't need to mention any names if there's any sort of.
No, we'll keep it anonymous.
Yeah. You don't need to say.
I'm gonna think about that one for a little bit.
All right, yeah, we'll come back to that one. Think about your funny story that you would be telling your kids. One time Dad did this with these people. So you think about that. We'll come back to that one in a minute. But on a more serious note, something that's come up. In the last few years, every now and then it gets touched upon. People argue about it, and then it kind of goes away. But I've never actually talked to an athlete and gotten their perspective. Do you think, given the time commitment you have with the sport and what goes into it, do you think student athletes and specifically football players should be paid above and beyond their scholarship stipends?
I don't think they should be paid for playing the sport. In general, I think, that's something you commit to. You get your scholarship, you get a free education at one of the top schools in the nation. I think it should be more for the merchandise, such as jerseys that are sold.
Right.
I remember I was in a class and there was a study done. That was when Zach Mills played. There was millions of dollars sold of his number 7 jersey.
Yeah.
However, he didn't get a single penny of that. and it wasn't sold for anybody else but Zach Mills. And the store's making money, some guy's making money, or some girl's making money that owns the store, but they're selling it's him, but however, he doesn't get any money. So I think stuff such as merchandise and things on the side that are, you know, somebody's making money because it's you. Yes, I think you should get money for that. I don't think you need above and beyond on your scholarship just for playing football.
No, I think I agree with that, because I mean, if you watch those 30 for 30 documentaries, especially the one about Fab Five, they talked about how they made millions upon millions of dollars for the University of Michigan, and they didn't see a cent of it. And you know, one of their protests was to stop wearing their jerseys during practice and so on. And it was, you know, you have to imagine what goes through the head of the star players on the teams, even the players that are just selling, you know, their numbers. It's, they don't, what do they get out of it? And what's the incentive for them? I guess there is no one. There is nothing for them. It's them going out and busting their ass, and then they see all these kids walking around with the number 5 jersey on, and that's awesome. But,
yep.
You know, that's you. You know, how did that make you feel?
Correct, yeah. And not only that, I mean, it even goes as far as, like, the video games. I can remember the one video game came out, my one friend texted me and said, hey, you're in the video game. I didn't even know I was in the video game, but once I got it and looked at it, it was my height, my weight, my hometown. It was all me. It was exactly me, but yet they can't put the name on it, but it's still exactly me. And again, EA Sports or whoever it is making millions and millions of dollars off that video game by putting these college athletes in their video games. And again, we don't see any of that. And, you know, it's not something that I'd be mad about. I mean, I played through it. I didn't let it bother me. I did fine. The guys before us did fine, and guys before them did fine. So I don't think it's something that's going to change any time, you know, real quickly or any thing. But, you know, it is something that could be looked at as an opportunity to help athletes get a little extra money for food or to get their families to the games and stuff of that nature.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there should be something, but then the counter argument is, you know, players like Zach Mills and even going further back, Kajana Carter, Kerry Collins, they were the ones that were selling all the jerseys. Should they reap all the benefits for that? And what about the players that were, you know, the 83rd, 84th, 85th scholarship players? Do they see any of that money, even though none of their jerseys are being sold? It's kind of a slippery slope once you start going down.
I think it's kind of one of those things, you know, if you're not one of the top players, your jersey's not going to be selling. I wouldn't say I was one of the top players. I still have people buying my jersey and getting my jersey. However, you know, before me, there was Larry Johnson. So there was a lot of fives prior to when I came, you know, and rightfully so, he should get, you know, he should have got money then when he was playing. And then I think once you graduate, then it goes to the next person until, you know, they're mass producing them for that person. But
do you think that would have caused some sort of rift in the locker room, though, if Kajana Carter was selling, you know, $100 million worth of jerseys? Do you think the 84th player would have been like, yeah, he's good, but why is he getting all this money and I'm not getting anything?
I don't think it should be given to them while they're in college, necessarily, just because then that kind of takes away their amateur status. I mean, if you look at golf, these amateurs that play that win or get second, third, that make tons of money off of it, they don't get it right away until they declare professional status.
Right. Interesting.
So I think there's a way around it. You could kind of hold off and then get it to them when they, you know, get rid of the amateur title. That way they're all the same when they're going through college. You could take some money that's raised because of the football team, coffee mugs with football programs on it, the poster, the football player poster, stuff of that nature that's sold, and use that stuff that's team-oriented, team-natured, to raise money to help give the players money to help get their families to away games, put them up in hotels or stuff of that nature, some side money for food, whatever it might be. That could be the stuff that's team-oriented. That could be the stuff that gets distributed amongst the team. But as far as the jerseys, I'd hold off on giving them the money until they get rid of that amateur title.
It's an interesting point. I don't think I've ever discussed that, you know, kind of banking the money. But that definitely, I think that would solve at least some of the issues.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the biggest problem. I mean, you look at other sports, they don't get the money until they get rid of the amateur status. And I think that's important because, like you kind of said, in the locker room, one guy's making, you know, even if it's just $1,000 because of his jersey, you know there's going to be stuff going on and people picking on him and him saying stuff like, oh, yeah, I got $1,000 because I'm better player than you, or my jersey sold more than yours. So you could just eliminate that by waiting until they left.
That's good. I like that idea. It's a little different. Certainly different than most of the things we've discussed. We have a former player who comments on the blog a little bit, and I feel like he's had some similar ideas to that, or at least banking the money and figuring out a way to distribute it kind of evenly. It's a complicated issue, I think, for a lot of people, and especially given the distinctions between football and other sports, and the way football and men's basketball too versus other sports on campus, it really gets to be complicated and difficult. I think probably the NCAA to prove.
Yeah.
Well. How about let's move on to another story. We're going to put you on the spot again while you're still thinking about your favorite overall story. One of the favorite staff members that was, you know, before all the changeover and was retained is Brad Caldwell. Many people know him as Spider. He's got a ton of stories. Anybody that's ever talked to him and knows, you know, a ton of different stories from him. He's the equipment manager. Do you have a favorite Spider story? Something broke that you needed to fix quickly, or something that he did that just kind of got you. You have a Spider story you want to trade?
Man, Spider was awesome. I'd whenever I had free time, or if I was hanging out in the locker room, I'd walk over and hang out with Spider and Kirk and let them tell me stories. And he told me stories back when I want to say Kerry Collins was playing. He could probably look this story up, but he told me one. It was that they were playing in a dome somewhere, and he was having problems throwing the ball or taking the snap. And Spider said the one time that this was before they ran the balls in or something, and Kerry kept struggling, and right before halftime, another bad one happened, and Joe went up to him and started yelling and said, "What's wrong with you? What's going on?" And he said, "The balls are soaked." And so Joe went running over to Spider and started yelling at Spider that, "Hey, we got to get new footballs in there. They're getting soaked." And Spider was like, "All right," and ran away. And then he started thinking, he's like, "How are the balls soaked? We're playing in a dome." So it's not like they're getting rained on. He's like, it didn't make sense, but Joe just went with what was told to him and came to me and started yelling at me. And he said, ever since, that's why we've been running footballs in. That's why the managers are there to run footballs in. That was a changing point on that. But I thought that was pretty funny just because it's, you know, you get caught up in that moment and you believe your players on what they're saying, you know, and then you go and you tell the next person they're passing on and get stuff, you know, taken care of so the balls aren't wet, but by the way, you're playing inside, there's no rain.
I don't know how I feel about Kerry Collins complaining about wet footballs in a dome.
Yeah, I know. I remember, you can look it up. I remember looking it up. It's in a book or something that Spider tells a story. you could get it exactly right, but it was pretty funny. So I remember that when he told me that. You know, he was just a cool guy. He kept you interested. He'd tell you stories. I mean, he's been there for so long, and he's just a great guy. And same as Kirk. Kirk was a great guy. He'd do anything to help you out. You know, Spider told me all along. He said, "You're gonna do well here, Graham. Just keep working hard." He's like, "I know you're impressing me a lot." He's like, "And I don't get impressed too easily." So that stuck with me, and he's always there to help me out. Even though I was a walk-on, I was proving myself early, and a lot of times as a walk-on, you're not going to get as many pairs of gloves, you know, as a scholarship guy, just because you're not playing as much as them. But they still gave me a new pair of gloves every week, just because I was working hard. I was proving to them that I could play there, and you know, it was pretty cool. It meant a lot to have the equipment managers really noticing you and you putting in the hard work and them, you know, respecting you for that.
Spider's been around the block a few times. I think if Spider respects you, you're probably in good company, it seems like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one of our readers asked about Joe's sense of humor. And I know there are infamous stories about people impersonating Joe and cracking jokes like that. But I guess the question is, what got him going and who could crack him up all the time? Was there anybody?
You know, mostly, you know, Joe was, you know, going stories. He'd tell stories. He always had stories to tell us, just for us to learn from, life lessons that he would turn into funny jokes and stuff like that. But, man, who got him going? Rich Hornberger always got him going. Rich was funny.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because if you follow Rich on Twitter, he's one of the funniest guys I've ever seen.
Oh, Rich is hysterical. He's some of the things Rich has done in practice and outside of practice are priceless and absolutely hysterical. So Rich will get Joe going. Some of the guys that struggle in school would get Joe going because, you know, to Joe, school wasn't hard. School was easy to Joe, and it made no sense why you were struggling. So he loved to crack jokes. He's saying things such as, all you have to do is go to class. It's not that hard. You can listen. So he always found a way to make everything a joke and be funny and have a sense of humor with everything to help guys relax.
I think Rich is one of the funnier guys. What about some of the later guys played up to 10 that might be playing now? Who are the funny guys on the team now, probably the upperclassmen since you've been out a couple of years? Who's still there that's going to make O'Brien laugh, that's going to make the new coaches laugh?
I think McCoy's pretty funny. He's a shy guy, but he's comical. Paul Jones is pretty funny.
Wait, did I just hear that Matt McGloin is shy?
He's a shy guy, but he won't speak too often. But when he does, he's a hysterical guy. He's pretty funny. All
right.
But he's not going to just approach anybody really to talk. He likes to stick to himself a little bit. But he is a very funny guy.
Interesting.
Yeah, that kind of goes against what you kind of see in the media make about Matt, because he comes off as kind of brash and kind of cocky. But
yep.
So
when he gets that limelight, he likes to go with it and have a good time with it. But you know, he'd probably steer clear of it if he could. You know, he's more of a quiet guy, I'd say, and not somebody that's going to approach everybody and be outspoken.
All right.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Well, I think we've gone long enough after the question. You hopefully have had some time to think about it. So we're going to circle back to favorite story that happened at Penn State within the football program that people may not know about, and keep it as anonymous as you'd like, though details are always welcomed.
I would say, story I heard that I wasn't there for, but I heard that I thought was pretty funny. And I'll tell one when I was there, but before was Coach Paterno. I think he was walking through the locker room, after practice, and in the locker room, there's the S, and nobody steps on the S.
Right.
And he walked across the S, and he was not happy because they had a bad practice, and they were going to the squad room and had a team meeting. He walked right across the S, and the whole team saw it, but nobody wanted to be the person to say, to him, like, Coach, you walked across the S. So they go down to the team meeting, they have the team meeting, and Gigione screaming at him and going nuts. And at the very end of it, he started to walk away, and he turned around, came back, and said, "By the way," he goes, "if I ever walk across that S again, you better stop me and make me do my my duty." And he instantly got down and started doing his push-ups and sit-ups, his duties for walking across the S.
How old is this story? How old was he? Would he have been?
Oh man, I don't even know. It was before I got there, but I mean, it was obviously, I'm guessing it would have been 10 years before I played, I want to say. Maybe like, I don't know, maybe when LeVar was there, I can't really tell you when it was, but they used to tell me that story a lot, and I was just like, man, that's, you know, that takes a lot for a coach to, when he's mad. Again, it goes back to what I said, he finds a way to put something positive, even in the negative, and that's what he did. Even though he messed up, even though the team had a bad practice, he still paid his duties and got down and did his push-ups and that. So it's kind of funny because, you know, it shows how much you know, of a legend he is. None of the players want to stand up to him. And then it, in turn, he flipped out on him for not making him instantly get down and do what he was supposed to do. As far as a funny story, when I was there, I want to say it wasn't uncommon for, I won't name anybody, but on a Monday, for a certain couple people to try and get in a little scuffle at practice so they could get out of conditioning on a Monday at practice. And it seemed to be on a regular occurrence. But when you came back in the locker room, this individual used to be curled up in a little ball in his locker and acting like he was crying. And then as Coach Paterno would walk through, he'd cry out to Coach, like, "Why did you kick me out?" And acting like a big baby that he was so upset that he got kicked out of practice. If you knew who the individual was, it would be a lot funnier just because you can picture him, a big guy curling up in a little locker.
Clearly it was an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I'm going to imagine it was an offensive lineman without a doubt.
That's a pretty good guess. But it was some of the funniest things because, I mean, it was almost every Monday throughout the whole season. And each time we'd come back in, it was a different cry, it was a different complaint, different whine. But, you know, it was right before conditioning. And, you know, this guy, he meant business, but at the same time, it was hysterical that he did this. It's so funny every week.
That's a good segue into one of our last questions, which is, who is the toughest player you ever played with?
Toughest player? Oh, man. There's a couple. I'd say for toughest little guy, I'd probably say Kevin Sooley is one of the tougher guys. I mean, he was a top wrestler in high school. And I can remember when we were on scout team, he was a scout team quarterback my first year. And Ed Johnson came up and grabbed Kevin Sooley, who was a quarterback, spun him around and threw him to the ground. And there was no need to do it, but he did. And Kevin got up, threw the ball right off the back of Ed Johnson's head. And I mean, really threw it and hit him in the back of the head. And they're about 7 yards apart, and all of a sudden Ed Johnson got a full speed, turned around, full speed, ran straight at Kevin Sooley. And Kevin Sooley did a two-leg takedown, dropped to the knee, picked Ed up and flipped him over his shoulder and slammed him down his back and just pinned him down and basically pinned him and was able to hold him down and was over top of him. And, of course, the whole defense was – I mean, this was a first-string defense. The whole defense was going to come running to attack Kevin. But once Kevin did this, they all basically started making fun of Ed and beating up Ed and jumped in and helped Kevin out. It was unbelievable because, I mean, Kevin wasn't that big either, and Ed Johnson's a huge defensive lineman. But for pound-wise, I think Kevin Sooley's pretty tough. As far as a bigger guy, definitely like Rich Orenberger, A.Q. Shipley were tough. Anytime there was a scuffle, Rich Ornberger was the first one to get there, defending whoever it was, helping them out, no matter who it was. It didn't matter if the guy was bigger than him, stronger than him, he was there to help out. He never turned down a fight. He usually won them, to be honest.
That's why he plays the Patriots now, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you were going to get in a fight, you made sure Rich was looking and ready to come running. Otherwise, you didn't want to be in it.
I like it. Those Dewey kids are pretty tough, I hear.
Oh, they're very tough. But, yeah, I'll never forget when he did that to Ed Johnson. It was unbelievable. Just amazing that he was able to pick up this 300-plus-pound guy and slam him on his back.
That's a great story. I actually really liked it. That was funny as hell. All right, so last question, and hopefully this one, hopefully we can get an acceptable answer, because Adam and I split on this decision. Do you watch a lot of movies? That's not the question. That's kind of a precursor.
A decent amount.
Are you familiar with kind of like the young Hollywood starlets that are out there right now, the good-looking actresses?
Some of them.
All right. So we had a debate the other day about two women, and we need you to settle something between us right now. Blake Lively.
Okay.
Or Emma Stone.
I'd have to go with Blake Lively.
Oh! Yeah, there you go.
Strictly because I went to Jimmy Fallon up in New York, and it was a year or two ago, and I got to see her live. She was on the show. I was in the front row. She was pretty good looking, so I'd have to go with Blake Lively.
There it is.
Which one did you guys choose?
More.
I had Emma Stone, just because she is so unbelievably attractive, and I can't get over it. And Blake Lively is attractive, too, but Emma Stone is just something about that fiery little redhead.
I mean, maybe if she was on the Jimmy Fallon show, I would have picked her.
Yeah, I'll blame Jimmy Fallon for Blake Lively winning, because he should have picked a better guest that night.
Blame Jimmy all you want, baby. It's fine.
All right, well, we'd like to thank Graham again for joining us. We've had a great time. Hopefully we can do this again sometime in the future. And for those of you listening, stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have something else coming up for you soon. We will obviously didn't cover any of the topics du jour, but that was by all three of our choices, because we wanted to have some fun tonight. So hopefully Adam and I will be back and discussing some more serious issues in the near future. So Graham, thank you. Adam, thank you. And we'll see everybody in the near future.
Thanks
guys.